The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Good morning, Anthony. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yes, the countdown clock is still going for the launch of SpaceX Dragon 2 tomorrow afternoon. Just reminding listeners, Israeli astronaut Eitan Stiba will be on board in that crew going to the International Space Station for 10 days. So look out for that. Hopefully the countdown will be completed tomorrow around 20 past 6 Israel time, around 20 past 5 South Africa time, something like that. That's the current estimation of the blast off. And just one other little snippet that the Kinneret rose by another 1 centimeter yesterday, in spite of us having very, very warm conditions and no rain in sight at all. Obviously, that comes because of the snow melting on the Hermon area running into the Kinneret. The Kinneret is now only 30 centimeters below being full. Wow. And let's not forget that we have the option of opening the sluice gates at the Dagania Dam, the southern end of the Kinneret, which will allow water to flow out of the Kinneret and down the River Jordan. The Dagania Dam sluice gate has not been opened since 1995. Mm. And it was interesting that in 1995, when it was opened, it was actually about 40 centimeters below the top, but it was deemed appropriate to open it up to allow water to run down the Jordan. Obviously, there is some advantage to allowing the water to fill the River Jordan and then up to run down towards the Dead Sea, which has also been suffering with low water levels, the Jordan River as well. On this occasion, it seems unlikely that we will get the sluice gates open, but Kinneret just 30 centimeters now below being full.
That's incredible. I mean, I can remember when it was very, very low. It was meters.
Right. So it has been, it has suffered a lot from very low levels. But in recent years, with the increase in the amount of desalination that Israel is managing to do, more and more water is being consumed from desalinated sources rather than relying solely upon the Kinneret and, of course, the aquifers, the inland and the coastal and the inland aquifers that are Israel's main natural water sources. But now we're seeing more and more consumption of water from the desalination sources. And in turn, that means that the natural sources, the aquifers and the Kinneret, are being given the opportunity to fill up a bit, and there's no bad thing in that.
Amazing. Let's get serious for a minute, or more serious anyway. Israeli Prime Minister Naftali Bennett has continued his efforts to rescue his coalition government and after it was left teetering on the edge yesterday. So what are the possible options to save the government?
Well, there's Prime Minister Naftali Bennett spent most of yesterday trying to resolve this government issue. Just to remind people of the events of yesterday, Naftali Bennett, when he and Yair Lapid originally put their government together, they enjoyed a majority of two. They had a coalition of 62 Knesset seats out of 120. Since then, two members of Naftali Bennett's Yamina party have left the coalition. The second one happened yesterday in the form of Idit Silman. She was the chief whip of the coalition, the head of the coalition, and she decided to resign yesterday, which left the current coalition government only with 60 seats and then potentially not being able to pass certain legislation as a result of that. Lots and lots of speculation as to what went down, which encouraged Idit Silman to defect. I mean, she hasn't formally defected to another party, but she simply left the current coalition. Lots of speculation about late night clandestine meetings between her and members of the Likud party who were trying to encourage her to leave the coalition. Lots of accusations on the part of Naftali Bennett about the fact that she was actually suffered some abuse, verbal abuse, and also some other issues, certain abuse against members of her family, against her husband and against her children, in an attempt to try to convince her to leave the coalition. Clearly, there was always the idea in her mind that the coalition wasn't fulfilling what she had personally hoped it would do. She comes from a certain stance. She's a modern Orthodox lady, comes from Rehovot, and she was standing up for modern Orthodox values. She accused Naftali Bennett of abandoning the Yamina party and their values in favor of trying to satisfy the eight-party coalition that he formed with Yair Lapid. So she says that she feels that he simply left all of those values that they stood for as a Yamina party behind, and he's become too centrist in his approach, given the fact that the coalition government is made up of quite left-wing parties as well as a few right-wing ones. The Yamina party considered to be on the right wing of that particular coalition makeup. And so it would be natural that in order to satisfy other members of the coalition, he would have to move towards a more central position. By the way, Naftali Bennett also having been accused of abandoning domestic issues in Israel in general in favor of trying to be more on the international stage and brokering peace agreements between Ukraine and Russia. And he was accused of that when we suffered the recent bout of terror attacks last week. And people felt that he might have forgotten that the Israeli domestic situation needs security and needs management in addition to trying to be on the international stage. We can park over all of those accusations for a moment, because now the Prime Minister is faced with some stark choices. Choice number one would be to try to continue to govern with a minority government, because even though 60 is exactly half, it's considered to be a minority government. He doesn't have that one vote, the majority vote required to make sure that legislation is passed. He could try to govern with a minority government, and it might well work for him, given that the opposition is not united. And in particular, let's bear in mind that amongst parties in the opposition is the Joint Arab List. They hold six seats, and they've come out already stating that they are neither going to rescue the Naftali Bennett Yair Lapid government, nor are they going to support the opposition headed by Benjamin Netanyahu and his Likud party. So the Joint Arab List are very much on the fence, but we have seen them vote in favor of legislation as part of the opposition grouping. So if they were to join the Likud and the opposition grouping, and let's assume that those two defectors from the Yamina party also join that grouping, they could potentially garner 60 votes in the Knesset. And all it needs is one member of the coalition not to be present at the vote, or to be sick, or to be abroad, or not to be able to vote, and the government could effectively be voted down. There could be a vote of no confidence, which the government could potentially lose, assuming all the other powers come together. But I think on a regular day, the current government makeup of 60 seats probably would be able to govern the country, probably, but I'm not quite sure whether this is something that Naftali Bennett is thinking about. He certainly hasn't made himself clear about which direction he wishes to go in. So I'm not sure whether he is going to try and govern with a minority government and suffer the possibility of a vote of no confidence, which could bring the government down. The alternative would be, of course, the ideal alternative is for him to somehow buy one of those individuals back, one of the two who left his government from the Yamina party, to try and encourage them to continue to support the coalition. That seems quite difficult to do. Of course, in the meantime, the opposition, the Likud, Netanyahu in particular, has congratulated Idit Silman on leaving the coalition, encouraged her to join the Likud, also encouraged other people who feel the same way as she does, that Naftali Bennett has abandoned the right-wing policies that represent the Yamina party. Other people who feel like that should also come to try and join the opposition. By the way, there are one or two people within Yamina who are currently part of the coalition who could potentially be considered to be candidates to join a right-wing opposition group. So at the moment, we find ourselves in sort of no man's land. It seems very unlikely that the Likud will be able to form an alternative government, assuming that this government is defeated. It seems very unlikely. And so the answer is that if Naftali Bennett does not manage to find a way, together with Yair Lapid, of continuing to govern with their current coalition, we could be back to elections. Aren't we all excited about that?
I'm sure you really are. But it does raise a question that has been a constant question and will continue to be a question. Is Israel a Jewish state or a state for Jews? They're not the one and the same thing, Anthony. And a Jewish state, you know, just like the Ten Commandments aren't the Ten Suggestions. there are certain things that have to be upheld if you are, in fact, a Jewish state. That's my opinion,
well,
and I'm just putting it out
there. Yeah, I mean, this dilemma sort of saw itself raised in the High Court judgment of 2 years ago, which raised the issue about whether chametz products, non-Pesach products, should be allowed to be brought into hospitals by individual members of the public,
yes,
without infringing upon the rights and the opportunities of other people at the hospital, other members of the public, to do as they wish. And the High Court decided quite clearly that people should be free to do as they wish. So if you wish to bring bread and rolls and non-Pesach food into a hospital over Pesach, the High Court has decided that you should be allowed to do so. Now, does that undermine the Jewish state, the Jewish nature of the state? Does that mean that this is not a Jewish state anymore, that it's only a state for Jews, as you termed it? I'm not entirely sure about that. Let's not forget that the hospital, as an institution, is fully kosher for Pesach.
No, it's not. So, if people are bringing chametz in, it's not.
Well, in terms of the food that is being served by the hospital itself, it is fully kosher for Pesach.
Yeah.
The fact that people happen to bring chametz into the hospital doesn't undermine the kashrut of the food that's being served in the hospital, and it doesn't affect other people around them, because like you, in countries that are not in Israel, have to interact with members of the general public who are not keeping Pesach, keeping kosher for Pesach, and it doesn't affect your ability to do so. You have your way of doing things, they have their way of doing things. There's a way to interact. It doesn't necessarily undermine anybody, and the High Court has made that decision. Now, we are obliged to carry out the ruling of the High Court. That is the way that this country works, whether or not we agree with their decision. The only way to change it is to appeal to the High Court and have it changed.
I mean, Anthony, if your wife, right, so Janine has she's made your whole house Pesachic, and somebody comes and they say, you know, someone that's coming for a Seder, or they're coming for a visit during Chol HaMoed, and they decide, well, they're eating chometz, and they bring you a cake that is not Pesachic, because it's their right to do so.
I think there is a little difference between your own private space,
yeah,
where you have the opportunity to decide what goes on in your private space, and going into a public space. Okay, when you go into a public space, it is exactly that. It is not your own private space. Now, does the fact that somebody brings a bread into a hospital make the whole hospital unkosher for Pesach? Well, apparently, Jews around the world have decided that actually it's okay to go to a place where, a public place, where there are non-Pesachic products and still keep Pesach for yourself. Why would that be different in Israel? Well, because it's a Jewish state. Of course it's a Jewish state. Or maybe it's a state for Jews, and maybe that's also absolutely okay, because initially when Israel was first set up, and when we had our independence, it was really both a Jewish state, but more than that, it was a state for Jews. And it's still a state for Jews today. And we see that with the Ukrainian refugees who are coming. It is a state for Jews, and not only for Jews. It's a state for someone who had one Jewish grandparent. Okay. Now, you know, we can have this debate about whether that means it's not a Jewish state. But
yeah, listen, it's a discussion because, you know, through conversation and through dialogue, we actually form better opinions. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Or more knowledgeable. And, I mean, when I think about this, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, where Israel was shutting down little Arab vendor stores because they were selling bread on Pesach. So how do you equate the two? Anthony, we've got to get to news. Can you stay with us?
I know that it's late, and I'm going to leave you right there, and I'm going to allow the listeners to have their debate over the weekend.
Let's
about
do it.
This. We can renew this on Monday again. There's a lot to talk about. And I will just wish you all a great weekend and a Shabbat Shalom. But let's keep this debate going. Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Shabbat Shalom, Anthony Reich. Always a pleasure to speak to you. Shabbat Shalom.